This is Angela Ewing with KCIW, Curry Coast Community Radio, and Ewing's Doings Out and About. If you have never been to Friends of Music concert, you have missed a treat. This organization brings the very best world-class musicians to Brookings during the winter and spring season. George Cady, who is with me today, is on the board of Friends of Music and will be talking about the music to come and what makes it all possible. Hello and welcome, George, to Curry Coast Community Radio.
Thank you, Angela. I'm very glad to be here.
I'd like to ask, first of all, what brought you to Brookings and why your interest is in classical music? Tell us a little bit about yourself, please.
Well, let me work those in the opposite order here. My interest in classical music started very early, when I was 8 or 9 years old. It had been in our family for quite some time. We had a piano in the house, which I think if you have a piano in the house, it's almost inevitable that you become interested in this. And that doesn't happen so much now. But at the age of 9, our school offered a very good instructional program in string instruments. So I had my choice of violin or cello at that time, and made the very scientific decision that because my grandfather had a cello, I'd take up the cello. So I played the cello, and I played it all through elementary and high school, and wound up going to UCLA and getting a degree in playing the cello. And after that, I taught some students and played some chamber music, and I auditioned for 3 of the major orchestras in the United States, Los Angeles, Salt Lake, and Dallas. Didn't make it into Los Angeles or Salt Lake. Case of nerves.
Yes.
Did make it into Dallas. And my wife and I decided we probably didn't want to live in Texas. And I wasn't making enough to support myself. And so that kind of became the end of my career, but certainly not the end of my interest in classical music. I went over to the dark side and became a defense contractor and an engineer in that business. And that was my career. When it came time to retire, we had friends up here who had a house, a second house, and they offered it to us when we wanted to vacation. The first time we came up here, we loved the place. We'd never buy anything impulsively, but before we went home, we had bought a lot and a contract with a builder to build us a house. And so we did, and we rented it out for 8 years until we were old enough to retire, and finally did. That was in 2004 when we moved up here.
Well, it's quite a jump to engineering from music, is it not?
Well, many people think they're not related, but actually it turns out they're quite closely related, and I can't quite explain it. But my own experience, when I stopped music, computers were just coming into being, and there were no computer science curricula at the colleges cranking out people to work in the industry, so you just had to take a little test, and then the companies would train you. And where did the companies recruit? Well, Ross Perot, who was founding a company called EDS at the time, figured out that musicians became the best programmers.
Oh, really?
And so he actually recruited in the music schools. And in fact, in my first job in the computer industry, my roommate was a soprano who was also training at UCLA and CalArts. And I think it continues that people who are trained in music do very well in math and engineering. I myself am a math tutor at SWOC, the local college. And so I get to exercise both sides now, working on Friends of Music and working at SWOC.
Maybe it's the discipline that's needed for both.
The discipline, the logic, and there are mathematical relationships in music that you don't explicitly think about or study, but probably a musician's brain is organized to deal with that in an organized fashion.
That's really interesting. Well, I know that Tom Broderick is involved in this organization, and he has been so good with bringing the classical music to this area. I'm assuming it takes a lot of time and dedication to find these musicians who have degrees, and obviously from the literature I've read, they all have such impressive resumes, don't they?
They sure do. We are very lucky in Brookings, a little inaccessible town here, to draw musicians who have played in all the great concert halls of the world and won many of the top prizes in musicians. And the reason why they want to come here is due in large part to Tom Proderick's efforts. He's built a network of contacts with musicians and their managers and agents, and they all want to come to Brookings. Just 3 days ago, I got a call out of the blue from a pianist in Armenia who wants to come and play in Brookings. He's won every award possible in Eastern Europe and Russia. I can't even find Armenia on the map, but somehow he found Brookings on the map and wants to play in our next season. And Tom established this network, and that's one of the three ways that we are able to draw these musicians. The managers and agents on our roster call us, and they make suggestions for the next year's programs. And then we have a selection committee that sits down and listens to their audition CDs or even their YouTube videos, and we make our choices. We try to balance each year's program so we get a variety of, like we have pianists and quartets and violinists yes. and trios and that kind of thing. The other way we manage to find musicians is selection committee members go out to concerts. We hear exciting musicians and we actually invite them to come to Brookings, and that works very well. So two of the concerts this year, the one that's already passed and one coming up in January with a very fine cellist, were discovered that way. So we have various ways to bring these musicians here, and the result is that Brookings people pay $15 to sit close to the musicians, where they could go to New York or Amsterdam or St. Petersburg and pay $150 and sit in the back row and hear the same concert. So that yes. makes us really, really lucky here.
Yes.
And
yes.
again, Tom Broderick has been a big part of setting that up.
How does it work when you have, though, just one cellist? But how do you think that will be received? Is it for our type of, shall we say, people that live here who they like the music, but they want a diverse program, I would think? Will she be playing something totally different with every number? How will that work?
Well, this is a special case. This, it turns out to be the 100th anniversary of the composition of two of the greatest cello pieces that are in the repertoire.
I see.
We had one at our last concert, and we have this other one coming in January. I personally have heard Hannah Addario Berry, who's going to be the cellist that day, play the Kodály Sonata, which is the piece in question here. It's fantastic. Nobody who comes is going to be disappointed that they came, because she's a fantastic cellist, and the piece is the absolute top of the cello repertoire in terms of interest. Now, how do we convince people before the concert to come and hear that? Well, we're just going to have to talk it up. I'm hoping that maybe we can get some excerpts of her music out to the community, and people will, they like cello music, and I think they're willing to gamble and come and just hear a cellist.
Yes.
It's kind of intimidating, you know, for the cellist to come out all by herself there, and there's nothing there but one chair and one music stand.
Exactly.
On the stage.
Yes.
But Hannah is an expert at it.
She's used to it.
Yes, she is.
Yes. Oh, great. Now, the pianist, Frank Wiens, is that how you say it, Wiens?
Yes, Wiens.
He's coming on the 25th of this month, and I've heard him before, and I just would not want to miss it. He's a fabulous pianist and a very gracious person. I just like him a lot. So what will he be playing?
Well, all of that about Frank is true, and in fact, he's probably performed more concerts in Brookings than any of the other musicians we've had. In fact, I'd like to do a retrospective of his previous concerts, but they've never been recorded, so we can't do that. But Frank is going to play for us this time a program he's selected of all composed of romantic music.
Oh, lovely.
Spanning the entire period of Romanticism from its inception with the late Beethoven on up to its climax with Rachmaninoff. And in stopping along the way at Chopin and Schumann and probably Brahms. So it's going to be a concert that, A, the pianist is very popular in Brookings, and B, that type of music is very popular here.
Yes.
So it should be a fantastic concert.
Great, great. Now, this is a question that I have often thought about. The reason why some of these concerts are not well attended has really been an issue for me. I try to put the word around, but have you any answers to that?
Don't get me going on that subject.
Okay, I won't. Do you think it's because we're not advertising enough? I mean, obviously you have a whole base of people who love classical music. On the other hand, there are those who really don't know it, have never been to a classical performance. They like the rock, and there's a lot of bands around here. We have a lot of music here. But what can you do to make people really appreciate classical music, and those that are going to perform here are top-notch?
Well, first of all, we are trying to step up our publicity and the awareness of the community of what we're doing here. We've had posters distributed all around Brookings and neighboring towns here. We are writing articles that get published in the Pilot now, and that should draw some attention to what we're doing. I'm sitting here doing a broadcast with you right on KCIW.
That's right.
And we certainly hope that not only will these podcasts help, but eventually when KCIW gets on the air, my objective is to not only publicize our concerts, but also in the long run, maybe to have a classical music program on KCIW that would allow us to enjoy the music and also to highlight what's going to happen in the community.
Yes, excellent. And you have, I understand, an outreach program, which is very important. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, we do. Related to this and the previous question, American school systems, for the most part, have had to cut their budgets recently. And when they cut the budgets, frequently one of the first things to go is the classical music program, which means that students going through the school system now wouldn't have the opportunities that you and I had when we were going through school to participate in classical music. Brookings has a music program that begins, as far as I can see, in the middle school system. Friends of Music has purchased a whole bunch of violins and cellos so that they have an active string program going now. And we have an outreach program where we ask each of the participants in our concert series the next day to go over to the schools and put on some kind of a program for the students there, especially the music students. And that can consist of either performing some pieces, or as happened just yesterday, we had a program where the performers gave I'll call it a master class, although it's novice musicians, but a master class for these musicians. They played right along with the student musicians. Ooh. And offered tips that even the beginning students could put into practice right away. They were very good. And they even involved the 80 to 100 people that were students that were in the audience and got them singing the parts of the music and the rhythm and everything. And it was truly exciting. I wish it had been filmed and we could show it. But
yes.
Anyway, so we do have this outreach program, and we try to get each of our performers to go over to the school and stir up a little excitement for classical music. That's the big gap. If we can get young people interested in classical music now, we already have the seniors who have pretty well developed sense of classical music. And if we can carry on that outreach program, I think maybe we'll eventually have permanent audience of all ages.
Good, good.
We do invite students to come to our concerts free of charge. And there were a couple last time, and I gave each of the students there an assignment. I said, next time, come to the concert and bring a friend. And after that, I want you and your friend to bring a friend. And here's a little math problem for you. Figure out how many times we have to do that before we fill the entire concert hall. So And it's not very many, by the way. So
how many seats in the concert hall?
There's about 300 seats in the concert hall, so you can figure it out. Before the end of the season, we'd be filling it with free students and not getting any ticket admissions, but I would be very, very happy to see that happen.
Well, what about programs just for children with the type of music, like Peer Gynt and all the children's stories, Hansel and Gretel, something like that? Couldn't we have even our own Del Norte orchestra performing things like that for children? I mean, they're not exactly professional, all of them. Some are good players, some are not, I found. But it seems to me that just to get the word out, don't you think something like that might work?
I think this would be good. This is like music appreciation for young people as opposed to performance. Not everybody's going to be a performer. But we do want everybody to be an appreciator.
Right, right.
And again, that used to be part of the school curriculum. You and I were exposed to Peer Gynt and Britten's music for orchestra for young people and Peter and the Wolf and all of that.
Yes, yes.
And that helped develop our interest in music. And, you know, in my case, okay, I went on to the next level, the 1812 Overture and
right.
some things like that. But that would be part of a music appreciation program, and I just don't see it happening right now
right
at this
away.
Time in
yes.
the school system. And it would be something that probably without a lot of expense we could get going if we could find time in the curriculum.
I think so, yes. Well, I'm hopeful because I think that's the whole crisis is getting young people, as we said before, the younger the better, to attend these and be a part of it.
Yes. This might be a good chance to mention a totally different model that's been implemented in Venezuela. In Venezuela, they established a national program of introducing students of all ages to classical music. And it starts at the age of 4. And the students make their own instruments at that point out of cereal boxes and things like that. And they learn a little bit about reading music and so on. And then they get real instruments when they get into the school system, and they play them for probably 40% of their school days dedicated to music. And you might think, oh my goodness, that's going to take away from the rest of their achievements in school. It doesn't. This has become the favorite part of their day. And as a matter of fact, the rest of the school day is held out as kind of a carrot. You do well in school or you're not going to participate
right.
in the music program. They all want to participate in the music program. And one of the results is that by the time they get up to high school and early college, they have world-class orchestras. The Venezuela Youth Orchestra is competitive with Philharmonic orchestras, and they're turning out some really, really good musicians. The whole country is becoming interested in classical music. And their first, you know, sensationally famous graduate is Gustavo Dudamel, who at the age of 26 became director of the Los Angeles Philharmonic.
Wow.
So that...
What an achievement.
It's an amazing achievement. Now, of course, Venezuela is a smaller country, and it's, well, it had a dictator and who became interested in this project. We aren't going to go that far, but I think that... if we would just sit down and think about how to have a continuous program all the way from start to finish, then classical music would permanently be on a solid footing here.
I think we need music, classical music, on our podcasts a lot.
Yes.
And I think we could help with that.
Well, I'm going to help with that as much as I can in this town.
Good. Well, George, I know that there's a lot of exciting things coming up. Perhaps you can give us clues as to what we can enjoy in the future.
There sure are, and as I've mentioned before, we try to provide a wide variety of types of concerts so people will get all their interests satisfied. We've already mentioned that the next concert is October 25th, and that's Frank Weens playing the piano and a program of romantic music. Then we have a break until next year. And in January, we start up with the cello concert that I've already mentioned and celebrating the 100th anniversary of the composition of the monumental Kodály cello sonata. And that will just be half the concert. We'll tell you about the second half when we figure out what it is. By the way, we do let our performers pick their own pieces for the most part, with a little bit of guidance from us. February 7th, we have a brilliant violinist named Stephanie Chase, and she'll be here playing a concert with piano accompaniment. March 6th, we will welcome a group from Germany, fantastic piano trio from Germany called the Morgenstern Trio. We have a pair of vocalists coming on Sunday, April 3rd. These are two people from the Portland area. They're both involved with the Portland Opera, and I've heard one of them a number of times in roles in the Portland Opera, and she's fantastic. And recordings of the other one, the baritone, are very impressive. Their names are Anton Beloff, he's the baritone, and Hannah Penn is the mezzo-soprano. And then our last concert, which is going to be on May 15th of next year, is just like the last concert of the previous season, which was very, very well received. First of all, it's free. That might have something to do with it. But it's Alexander Tutinoff, who's a professor of piano at Southern Oregon University. And he will bring with him the students who have received scholarships from the Friends of Music. And so Dr. Tutinoff will play, and each of the scholarship recipients will also play. And it is unbelievable how good they were last year, and we are hoping that they will be equally good this year.
I remember them last year.
Yes.
That was lovely. And Alexander and I go back a long way. I knew him when he first started at the university.
Yes.
So that was an interesting thing to see him again. And yes, he brings such wonderful people with us.
He's a wonderful man. He's a wonderful pianist.
He is.
And he's very personable and relates well to both the students and the audience. So that should be a highlight.
Yes, good.
I should mention that all of these concerts take place at the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which is located at 102 Park Avenue in Brookings. All of the concerts are on Sundays, and they all start at 3 o'clock p.m. Tickets are $15 a person per concert. As I mentioned, students get in free. And the last concert with Dr. Tutinoff, that concert is free also.
Now, if someone wants to buy tickets for the whole season, who do they call?
Tickets for both the season and for individual concerts are available at our outlet in town, which is Wright's Custom Framing. You can go in there anytime and get tickets, or you can buy tickets at the door. And our tickets, we were able to lower the price this season. It used to be $20. It's now $15. And they can be purchased at the door, either for the season or on an individual basis. We're also very eager to have people become members of the Friends of Music. And that helps us provide these concerts at the cost that we're able to. And memberships in the Friends of Music is $10 per year, or $75 for a life membership.
Great. That's, I would say, very good price. In fact, it's not very much when we consider that any other orchestra would be probably very expensive. So we're very lucky.
Absolutely. You can go to a concert in Los Angeles and, ticket prices start probably at about $55, $65 and go up to $155 or $65.
Well, in Medford also, they're quite expensive.
So, yes. Yeah, this is the deal of the century right here
it
at
is.
Friends of Music.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you, George, for being with us today. That's so interesting.
It's been my pleasure, and I look forward to producing future podcasts that will be describing the concerts in more detail. Thank you again.
Thank you. This is Angela Ewing with KCIW, Curry Coast Community Radio, Ewing's Doings. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to Curry Coast Community Radio, your community-supported radio station. If you like this program and want to hear more like it, consider becoming a founding member. For more information, go to our website, kciw.org.